Hello, this is Graham Freer. I'm sitting in the studio of Radio Haslow, where I do my weekly show. And with me is Mark Fisher, who, in fact, has been here before. You are a writer, and you've written about this very building that we're in, which is Bury House. Is that right, Mark?
Well, I'm more of a novelist, and I've used the backdrop of Bury House and some of the characters that have lived here in the past. So I wouldn't say that I've actually written about Bury House itself, but I've got a trilogy of novels that I'm working on. The two are already out, and in which I've used Mary Atwood, who was a very prominent occupant, really, of this house in Victorian times.
Can you tell me about her?
Who was she? She was an absolutely fascinating and clever lady. She was self-taught at home with her father, who was also something of an academic. She could interpret Latin scripture, Greek. She was very interested in the alchemy side of things, and would delve into all sorts of writings from the past in order to try and understand this idea that was growing in Victorian England about alchemy. And the interesting thing about her was at some point her books had been published with the help of her father on the subject, and something untoward happened, and they decided that they would retrieve all the books and burn them on the lawns of Bury House.
Perhaps because he was a vicar or something.
Yeah, quite. I think it was. It's probably some connections to a religious issue there. But I thought that was a fascinating idea as part of the plot of my book, to have this lady who could open up this other world. I think that's what they were obsessed with at that time.
They were very much into that sort of thing back in Victorian times, weren't they?
Yeah, oh, definitely. That was when they started to invent ghosts in all sorts of places.
Spiritualism,
yeah,
and that sort of thing.
All those kind of things, and this obsession with alchemy that you could
turn lead into
gold and those kind of things, which was a fascinating idea.
Who wouldn't like to do that?
Indeed. And I think the idea that there's this other spiritual world that's maybe not religious, but it's just a kind of deep sense of understanding of mankind that was somehow buried within the earth, that you could unlock all these. And I thought, what a fabulous idea that was. And so she, in book two, I used her as a kind of central pivot character, as a strong female character as well, which I thought was quite interesting.
You like writing about strong female characters, evidently.
Well, I think it's easy not, to get too wrapped up in, as a male writer. I understand the male psyche. I like to think a little bit more than I do perhaps the female, and you've got to try and find a balance. But you've got to try to work hard, I think, and maybe it works vice versa as a female writing male characters. You have to sit and think about it, because it would be so easy to get that wrong.
I'm thinking George Eliot, maybe.
Definitely. I think it's always a challenge, I think, writing for the opposite sex and trying to and be too clever. So it's not an easy one. But Mary was a gift, I would say. I that's the way I always describe her, as a kind of gift. She was this intellectual lady of Victorian times, and if you think, it was a very male dominated society. It was quite interesting. And actually writing some of the prose on Mary's behalf, because I'd had her writing in diaries and things, was quite an interesting challenge. So I came across a couple of called Chambers Journals that were published in the 1880s, and they were really a kind of Reader's Digest of the time, and really stole all the language from there and just hoovered all that up. I used to read that every night and try to get a sense of the prose and the style of that kind of era. So it's not that gothic, if you like, Dickensian style of writing, but an everyday style of describing everyday events, and so that was a challenge, but interesting, I think. So
it's important to immerse yourself in the characters of the time, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. I think it's And you need to understand your character. So I spent a lot of time writing dialogue between characters before, rather than just putting it into the book and writing into the book, and just trying to hone it, and then going back and reading it 3 days later, just to see, does it feel Victorian? Does it have that right feel to it? Because otherwise, when you're reading it, people will just suddenly drop out of it. You only need one wrong phrase or one word in there that doesn't quite click.
That critical,
oh,
is it?
I think so. I think people, if you're, it's quite an intimate experience, I think, between the between. And the reader and the writer, you know, the writer sits there in the dark, writing all these, sculpturing all these passages, and then the reader is trying to immerse themselves into the same feeling that the writer was trying to put over, and you can easily run along that route and feel quite immersed in it, and it's you suddenly get something wrong and it drops you out of that moment, of that feel, and I think that's something that I try to care a lot about. I'm quite particular about.
So some little phrase might jar with.
Definitely. I mean, it would just immediately, I think, take you out of the moment that immersion, if you like, and suddenly bring you back out of that rather than into this world that the writer hopes you've fallen into.
You could totally destroy the whole thing with just a misplaced word.
Yeah, I think you could. I think it could be a disappointment. I think every writer, I think, tries to hone that. If the prose and the dialogue, I mean, just to try and get it right, they want the reader to have the same experience that they're having when they're actually writing it. So I think it's just caring about the notes, really, if you like.
Wasn't there rather an interesting character who used to live in this very building, a pirate or a smuggler or something?
I think that originally the Bury House was built by a guy who I think brought himself up by the bootlaces and earned a living smuggling and done very well out of that trade. I think much to the ire of the local populace and probably the big wigs of the area.
No doubt.
It was built on smuggled money, if you like. This very building. At some point, he was arrested and charged with this smuggling and fined the exact amount that the house was worth, and therefore he had to sell the house to pay the fine, and that was the end of his kind of era at the property.
And there was, there was reputed to be a secret tunnel leading from the house back to the back of the stables, as they were.
Oh, I've no doubt that if you went deep enough into the, there would be something. Smugglers, that's how they covered everything. That's where, it doesn't matter where you go in the country, whether it's, you know, on the coast or these old houses. I think that's a big part of it, burying stuff.
So is writing your life then?
I'm trying to make it that. So I try, my background is, and the things that I do is housing and homelessness, and I've worked with the government, been over to Stormont, to Ireland, and talked on housing and homelessness over there, and it's really that kind of urban life that I grew up in Gosport, really. That, you know, I'm Gosport born and bred, that I kind of draw on for my stories. I think there's an awful lot of interesting characters and fabulous personalities that live in the urban underbelly of every town wherever you go. So
I would say that you're probably one of those characters.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I grew up on the streets of Rauner and Bridgemary, and I've always had that, you know, proud of where you come from. I think it's important. And that's why my books, as a backdrop, I use Gosport Fareham, because
it feels right. It,
indeed, and you can just let yourself draw on those experiences and things that are important. So, I mean, for example, the River Hoe. Very few people probably know that the River Hoe exists. I mean, Gosport, and it runs right along the Hoe Ford, which is the pub, which is the ford on the River Hoe that runs under the road, and people drive. And now, when I was a child of about 9 or 10. We used to swim in that. It was a swimming hole down there where you could catch. It was that clean with sticklebacks and elbows, but all that's gone. But it would be a shame to lose that. So for me, it's as important as pasting those kind of images and those places into my writing as well.
Well, thank you very much indeed for joining us today. It's been a great pleasure meeting you and talking to you.
No, thank you
for your time.
Pleasure.